This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.
Hello and welcome to the Inside Commodity Futures Podcast. I'm Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take, and with me is John Payne, author of This Week in Grain. How's it going, John?
I'm doing really well, Craig. Thanks for having me today. Always nice to join you on this weekly basis.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we were just talking a little bit before here, I think, you know, soybeans and corn have, you know, are looking strong still since we talked from last week. Mostly corn has come up about, maybe 15 cents since the last time we talked.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just around 380 when we closed Tuesday a week ago, and pushing on $4 here, 397 three quarters as we closed. So beans have made a push towards their high, that kind of late April high that got everybody off in a tizzy. Beans have touched that high and broken it, and corn has not. So maybe we'll look like to make a run up there above $4 again to see how much corn is really for sale.
Yeah, and December corn, 404 and a half it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the new crop highs from back in September, October, right around 420. You know, with we were talking ethanol has been higher, crude oil has been higher, gasoline has been higher. So I think the energy complex, you know, could help out corn here coming in. Soybeans, you know, soybeans with bio, you know, biofuel could too. But really, I think, you know, the meal has been strong for soybeans. And, you know, that if there's one thing I've noticed in the grain markets lately is the new crop carryout estimates for soybeans. The more you look at it, it, you know, it's probably what the number one thing the bulls have to point to right now. So if we do break up, you know, I'm looking at November beans. We closed at 1067 today. I think that's a new high on the close. And we'll, you know, sometimes that causes technical buying. We'll see if there's some follow through here. But, you know, the November beans, you know, if we lose, you know, Informa did say we're going to add on about, you know, a couple hundred thousand acres. So it's not, you know, under a million, not a big deal, but it will add some back. But that ending new crop estimate of about 300 million bushels for ending stocks and a carryout. That's going to be just a focus, you know, a big focus of that soybean trade between now and, you know, probably to the end of summer.
Yeah, it's a different market than you and I have been used to. You know, Craig and I both started in this business back in the late 2000s and really saw the demand side rallies from the mid 2007, 2008 when the markets got real hot there with China kind of stepping into the world stage and buying essentially everything in sight. But since then, we've been basically rallying supply side, you know, off of crop year, poor crops in South America, poor crop years like 2012 and 2011 here in the U.S. But in those years, we would always see the carryout for that front month or that front year be smaller than what we're looking to plant in the years after. This is different for beans. So it's a little bit tougher for me to get my head around how to trade it because you have this old crop carryout stock number that's basically – I'll say double what it was last year, but 150 million more, depending on what you believe the USDA had it. So we're sitting around 400 million. And then you have the new crop stocks number at 300 million.
Right.
So it's a little different. Like, how, you know, what's the rub? Is the buying really should be in the new crop with the lower carryout, but if we have a tough year to grow it, you know, we'll depend more on that older crop story. So I don't know. It's an interesting thing. You follow the spreads. You see anything weird there?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you make up a great point, because in years past, it's always been about the demand for the old crop and having, you know, and then having the new crop year to come in and help with supplies. And right. Now we've got adequate to abundant old crop supplies, and we have adequate to potentially tighter new crop supplies. So what does
we're
that really
soybeans,
mean?
Bro.
And
yeah,
we're talking soybeans. Yeah, we're talking soybeans, right? So if you look at the July versus November soybean spread, you know, if the roles were reversed, let's say we had 250 million bushels old crop and 400 million bushels projected new crop, you know, the no July versus no soybeans might be 30, 40, 50 cents inverse, right? But that's right. Not the case. It's, you know, so what's interesting with beans is we're still inverted. Because I think, and this is in my opinion, that the job of the market is basically to bring down old crop stocks and add it to new crop. Because the thing, because you got to remember about new crop stocks is that, you know, part of the equation is how much you carry over from the year before. Because you take old crop ending stocks and that becomes beginning stocks and new crop. So to so basically we have this allocation now where we have higher prices in the old crop. We have lower prices in new crop, and you know what I think the job of the market really is to price the old crop basically high enough, you know, where maybe
so they're rationing.
Yeah, some of the sales switch over, you know. So I don't know. It's an interesting question. I don't know if we haven't seen something like this since I've been here, and I would think that another thing that I would think about with the spread market is try not to look at it so much as, well, there's old crop and that's fixed, and there's new crop and that's fixed. What's really what the market's going to trade is that by the end of harvest, you know, this year and then into the marketing year of next year, we're only going to have a projected, you know, carryout of 300 million bushels. And it doesn't matter so – it may not matter so much to an economist what old crop is. Like old crop might, I know it says 400 million and we always pay a lot of attention to it, but to maybe like the people on Wall Street or the mathematical models and the algos, what might only really matter is there going to be a shortage at some point? And that would be at the end of the next marketing season. So that could be the big driver for soybeans. It's going to be really interesting how they ration that. Like, because think about this way too, if beans are going to be a shortage next year and they're plentiful this year, What are you going to do? I mean, if it's just in a physical commodity sense, like why would you sell your beans now when you can sell them for a higher price later? So what then happens with old crop? Does old crop go higher because you don't have as many people selling? You know, it's an interesting dynamic.
It is. It's weird. It's you know, to the point where, you know, do you tell guys from an advisory standpoint, you know, I will say there aren't a lot of guys I talk to with soybeans around in the bin. It's not a product that farmers tend to want to store because it's a little more costly and it's some threats to quality that can come. But down the road, I would think that you're going to have the blend happen. And you know, you look at some of the contracts out in like August and September. We really haven't seen the move quite as much as we've seen in that front month. And then you go out into next year and you're getting into a heavy inversion. And I'm talking more of the 17 contract. So sometimes if you're a little confused on, say, hey, where this thing could go longer term, you'll look at where the 17, 18 contracts are trading, and those have not really moved. So, I mean, I personally think, you know, the market's probably bracing for many more soybean acres next year, which
right.
could benefit corn. We've seen that the 2017 corn contracts jump here in the last couple of days as well. So, tough market to deal with when you're at that, because you want to say to the clients or anybody who's trading it from the hedge side, say, hey, you know, we have X amount of bushels on hand, 150 million more than we did last year. But then if we don't get the crop into the ground in time, which right now pace of planting is decent, but it's wet and it's cold here in the Midwest, and if that doesn't change here the next couple of weeks, you could have some problems with planting. What happens then? That old crop then becomes very relied upon, like you said, to kind of keep prices at, you know, keep the buyers at bay for the shorter term.
Yeah, and also, too, think about this way, like, you know, the old crop marketing season ends, you know, basically with harvest, which isn't that far away. I mean, it's about 5 or 6 months away, but it's not like eons away, right? So the thing is, like, if you're a processor, if you're in the business and you're an end user and you're looking at this and saying, well, I've got all this old crop available now And I'm not sure about what's going to be around, you know, in the fall or in the winter. And we start having weather issues and the crop starts getting smaller. I mean, as a businessman, it's in your best interest to start securing those beans right now. Right.
Right.
So all of a sudden, you know, you see the demand. Are you going to want the old, you know, you don't know if the new crop beans are going to be there. So you're going to start trying to secure those old crops. So very interesting situation. I don't, you know, it's good. It's going to be tough, I think, for marketing. And I think, you know, for a lot of people like us, brokers and analysts, it's going to be kind of hard. You know, there's no playbook, I think, from the past 5 or 10 years that you can look at and say, well, you know, based on X, Y, Z, we expect this
right.
to happen. It's going to be different.
Right. Well, like you said, I'm just looking at the MRCI seasonal recs, MRCI third-party advisor of ours. If you ever have any questions on MRCI, you can always email Craig or myself. But MRCI talks about how this is the time of the year where the soy meal prices tend to rise because of the reason you just mentioned.
Yeah.
The folks who have to feed, and they have to feed, you know, the pigs that they've bought or, you know, they're feeding this soy meal to the chickens. They need to eat. So
yeah, right.
they have to secure it. It's almost like having kids. You know, you got to have – you have to supply it, and
right.
Now, like we talked about, there's some crop anxiety that kind of creeps in, and you know, the market you know, is giving folks a reason to try to shut off some of that buying right now, and maybe move those contracts into the deferred months. But I don't know, beans are going to be a tough animal this year. Part of me would say that, you know, $11 is going to be a tough nut to crack, but
mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of it depends on, say, the macro situation too. And you and I both have been waiting for our interest rate hikes to come around for, shoot, a year and a half now. And
right.
We're still sitting here in June, and we've only done it once in the last, decade. So mm-hmm. that is inflationary in the more shorter term, but that can change in a light second. So this is why hedging exists. When you don't know, you tend to want to maybe take a piece out of the risk, and that's what we're here to do.
Yeah, and, you know, we're at prices now, you know, I think, you know, for soybeans – and corn, where, you know, a lot of farmers aren't underwater anymore, you know, I mean, or at least it's not nearly as bad as it used to look like. So I don't know. What's going to be interesting, I think, I was talking to a few farmers today, and, you know, corn is always, you know, we've always referred to corn as king corn, you know, around here, and, you know, farmers mm-hmm. like to plant corn, and it's the most planted acres, and, you know, it really is what guys like to store, and manage throughout the year. But, you know, as more and more countries around the world grow and export corn, and it becomes less of and nations and the world becomes less and less dependent for U.S. corn, you know, the only thing that the world is really going to be dependent on, like it used to be with wheat and corn, is the soybeans. So,
right.
I mean, I would not be surprised if we do see more soybean acres next year and going forward, because if the whole world, produces wheat, the United States really just becomes the kind of the last resort now for the wheat
right.
market.
Right.
It's going down that road for corn, especially if we don't have a new growth driver. You know, for
right.
years now, you know, for the past 6, 7, 8 years, it's been the ethanol mandates, but that's
mm-hmm.
we're not growing. You know, I was looking at some USDA tables from 2006 and 2007. We were using like 1.5 billion, you know, billion bushels of corn for ethanol back then.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're over 5 billion bushels. I mean,
yeah.
And it's the way the mathematics work and the usage works and the whole 10% ethanol thing. It's not going to really expand that much anymore. We're kind of at, I wouldn't say peak ethanol production, but it's really going to taper, you
right.
know, taper in terms of growth. So really, if you look for growth drivers, it all has to do with population growth, wealth accumulation, and which lead to ultimately, you know, a growth in protein demand. And that's soybeans. And right now it's just South America and the United States that really
yep.
produce it. And, you know, so if you're going to get the big price spikes, if you're going to look, you're the farmer and you're looking at the, you know, the volatility and where prices can go, I just think in the coming years, we're just going to, it's going to go from king corn to king soybeans. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but that just, it's kind of how it feels, you know, maybe over the next couple of years.
Well, we're certainly there on the ratios, closing somewhere around 2.7 now, you know, which is relatively high compared to where we've been in years past. And I think as you get into the growing season, it could expand even further if we have a tough year. There, you and I are both saying there's not really no real bullish story here for corn that we see. I mean, the carryouts are you know 5-year, 6-year highs now, and.
Mm-hmm.
you know, as you go back into the early 2000s, it's like 05 since we've had levels at these, 15% plus. So when you jump into next year's carryout, you know, demand could certainly come up, which what we saw in that last USDA number. But I think, you know, we're capable of producing more corn if you would forego the soybeans. But if beans are going to be high, that might keep corn up as well in the shorter run. What's going to keep, I think, corn tethered somewhere to the $4 level is just the wheat market's not wanting to move. Wheat really needs to get going, and you and I both agree, I think, that there's little to talk about on the bullish side at that point.
Yeah, there is. I mean, the dollar isn't even really helping it that much, and there's plenty of wheat on the world stage. There's plenty of wheat here in the United States. And then for the demand to pick up for wheat, the only way to really reduce those stocks is for wheat to compete heavily with corn. For feed use. Right. So, you know, now that means wheat has to trade underneath, you know, wheat has a higher protein content than corn, so it can add a premium, but usually no more than a dollar. As a general rule, you know, that can change, but especially for the Chicago wheat. So for the Chicago wheat to really compete with the feed and basically be in more demand, usually has to be lower than, you know, less than a dollar premium to corn. So, you know, right now, if you look at July wheat, I think we're closed around 480. July corn was around, I'm going to assume somewhere between 380 and 390 or 390 or something like
that. On the board we are. If you throw in the basis with some of these guys in the new crop wheat, it's pretty close. They're $3 in the Texas Panhandle, high threes as far as what cash is. So they're already seeing that feed kind of come into the market now. And, with all the rains they've gotten out west, I think they're going to have another big crop in the Kansas City wheat market. So as we talked, we're essentially trading on pretty decent lows. I think there's only been one time in the last decade that we've been below 20 cents on the July Kansas City versus Chicago wheat contracts, and we are there right now. We did go to 40 a year ago, so I do tend to tell folks, don't think this is the low just because we haven't ever been here before or been here seldomly. But the market, I think, has absorbed a lot of this news, especially in the wheat market. So, if there's a bullish story out there, wheat will really ramp quick and maybe pull the rest of the grains with it. But I think you're probably going to see corn stuck in a range.
Yeah, stuck in a range, and soybeans should spike or you get some kind of short covering opportunity. Like, who knows, maybe December corn can go to, new crop corn can go to 420 or 425. At that point, I would think you'd see a lot of activity on the cash side and the hedging side if that did happen.
Yeah. Well, the rest of the week, pretty slow, I think, from the grain perspective. Not a lot of news. We do have cattle on feed on Friday, so the cattle market's, I think, being buoyed a little bit by corn that has come up in the last couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting to see what those numbers show. Market seems ready to be poised. For anybody out there who does like livestock, we're launching a new newsletter here called The Cattleman's Advisory. It's a gentleman out in Montana named Kirk Donsbach. We'll have him on the podcast at some point here. He's in the fields. So the guy is a rancher full-time, part-time broker, essentially just running his hedging program for folks up in the Montana area. And he's going to be writing a newsletter so other folks can see what he's doing. So if you like cattle and like following the livestock markets, maybe have something new for you here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and John has shared some of those commentaries recently. They're good. I mean, I've been real impressed with those. So I'm looking forward for that coming out. I think kind of just to wrap this up, my really only final note here about what to look for is, you know, if things get for traders and also, you know, for hedgers and people looking to make cash sales, if we lose acres in beans either because of planting delays or we start losing yield because of either hot or dry weather later this summer, beans probably have, you know, some potential to go higher if we do have yield losses. So that is something I would keep an eye on, you know, especially for the traders out there. And if you're trying to market your grain, not everyone always loves buying put spreads. If you don't want to cap your upside going forward for the next couple of months, maybe that's the way to go. I mean, you talk to me or talk to John or your own advisor about it. But I would just say that the soybeans are probably have the most potential going forward.
Well said. Well said.
All righty. Anything else, John?
No, that's it. We'll be back next week. Thanks for all the feedback from everybody who emailed while we were on our little hiatus there. We'll be back every week now and giving you guys what you want.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, John, and we'll talk next week.
All right. Have a great one.
All right.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.